A different problem arises when trauma victims themselves become literally speechless, when the language area of the brain shuts down. I have seen this shutdown in the courtroom, in many immigration cases, and also in a case brought against a perpetrator of mass slaughter in Rwanda. When asked to testify about their experiences, victims often become so overwhelmed that they are barely able to speak, or are hijacked into such panic that they can't clearly articulate what happened to them. Their testimony is often dismissed as being too chaotic, confused, and fragmented to be credible. Others try to recount their history in a way that keeps them from being triggered. This can make them come across as evasive and unreliable witnesses. I have seen dozens of legal cases dismissed because asylum seekers were unable to give coherent accounts for their reasons for fleeing. I've also known numerous veterans whose claims were denied by the Veterans Administration because they could not tell precisely what had happened to them. Confusion and mutism are routine in therapy offices. We fully expect that our patients will become overwhelmed if we keep pressing them for the details of their story. For that reason, we've learned to pendulate our approach to trauma, to use a term coined by my friend Peter Levine. We don't avoid confronting the details, but we teach our patients how to safely dip one toe in the water and then to take it out again, thus approaching the truth gradually. We start by establishing inner islands of safety within the body. This means helping patients identify parts of the body, postures, or movements where they can ground themselves whenever they feel stuck, terrified, or enraged. These parts usually lie outside the reach of the vagus nerve, which carries the messages of panic to the chest, abdomen, and throat, and they can serve as allies in integrating the trauma. I might ask a patient if her hands feel okay, and if she says yes, I'll ask her to move them, exploring their lightness and warmth and flexibility. Later, if I see her chest tighten and her breath almost disappear, I can stop her and ask her to focus on her hands and move them so that she can feel herself as separate from the trauma. Or I might ask her to focus on her out-breath and notice how she can change it, or ask her to lift her arms up and down with each breath, a qigong movement. For some patients, tapping acupressure points is a good anchor. I ask others to feel the weight of their body in the chair or to plant their feet on the floor. I might ask a patient who is collapsing into silence to see what happens when he sits up straight. Some patients discover their own islands of safety. They begin to get that they can create body sensations to counterbalance feeling out of control. This sets the stage for trauma resolution, pendulating between states of exploration and safety, between language and body, between remembering the past and feeling alive in the present.